Welcome to Pick Up and Deliver, the podcast where I pick up my audio recorder when I take the dog out for a walk and deliver an episode for you while we stroll around. I'm Brendan Riley. Well, hello, hello, hello. Thank you for joining me today. What a lovely day it is. Realize I use that adjective too much, lovely. I was thinking about that. I bet I use the word lovely in about half of the episodes, if not more. But, you know, when you go out for a walk in the morning and the sun is out and the temperature is that perfect, like mid to late high 60s that just lightly caresses your skin and it just feels glorious, it's great. What a beautiful day. And I'm excited to be out for a stroll and talking to my friends across the internet. Today is also Toggle Top Day. Maybe that's why I'm so excited. My local gaming group has our semi-annual all-day game event from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. And I actually am getting there early to help set up. It should be a good time. I'm going to be running the Smash Up tournament, which is funny because I've only played that once, but mostly that means I'm manning the whiteboard, so it shouldn't be too much of a thing. But it looks like it's going to be a great time. I'm excited. I've got a game of Study in Emerald set up to play. I'm bringing along Grim Forest, which I already have a couple people who want to play that. I'm bringing Mountains of Madness. I'm hoping to get a six-player game of that going. That should be a hoot. And a number of other games. Ooh, Lemuria, which is a small box worker placement game. No, it's not worker placement. What would you call it? It's a small box game I picked up at Origins last year, and we played once, and I really liked it. My wife wasn't so keen on it, though, so I haven't gotten it out again. It's sort of like mini Zolkin. Hard to explain, but that's the best I can do. Not as complicated as Zolkin, but should be good times. I reread the directions and everything, so hopefully I can get that played as well. And who knows what other games will appear. Someone's watering their lawn today. There's a truck driving by. It's great. So I was looking back at the history of the podcast, looking at the kinds of episodes I'd done, and I realized I did a few episodes early on about different kinds of game mechanisms, and then I haven't really returned to that well. So I thought today, given that I'm going to go play a Study in Emerald, it would be interesting to talk a little bit about hand management games. I will admit that this is a category I'd hear people use this phrase occasionally, but I never really knew what it meant. So I looked it up on BoardGameGeek and then looked through my collection a bit, and I'm ready to talk about it with you. The hand management mechanism is the idea that you as a player are managing, controlling, shaping the cards that are in your hand to be used in a particular order or combination. The idea is that your success comes from manipulating the cards you have and then playing them in the right way. I think I said the same thing twice there, but I wanted to give it time to sink in. So in terms of classic games, if you think about something like Gin would be the ultimate hand management game, where you're drawing one card and discarding one card every round. You set down a perfectly managed collection of different kinds of sets and runs and so on. And then thus your hand has been managed correctly, a hand management game. In board games, this is something that we see a lot, and it seems like it overlaps in interesting ways with a couple other really common mechanisms. A hand management game in board games would be one where you're trying to accumulate the right set of cards in your hand to do something interesting. On one hand, you can think of things like Netrunner and Magic as kinds of hand management games where you have a deck and your goal is to move the cards through your deck in such a way that you can then play a great sequence of cards. But those probably aren't generally going to be called hand management because while you do play cards in combination and you do use your cards sort of in sequence, so you want to get the right set of cards into your hand to use them all at once. Netrunner and Magic both also depend on a tableau of cards that you put out that shape what you can do. So often the big play in Netrunner is having one or two cards and then having a collection of cards on a table that do something as well. So that isn't quite hand management probably by the style. Another place where this seems to overlap with other things, I guess I'm starting with the things hand management is not, is with deck builders. A game like Dominion or the Harry Potter deck builder. These are games where you start with, or Arctic Scavengers is a favorite of mine. These are games where you start with a collection of cards that are usually the same for everybody or very close to the same. And then as the game goes along, you add to that deck and that shapes your experience that you can have, a deck builder. The big thing about this is you generally don't do any hand management in a deck builder, or much, because your hand is exhausted each round. I say that, but that's not entirely true. I immediately contradicted myself. Classic Brendan. So if you think about something like Legendary, or Dominion, I think Legendary I like better because it uses these cards that carry icons, and then the icons riff off each other, which may be something Dominion does too. I haven't played enough Dominion to know that. So in Legendary you have these cards, and some of them will have an icon on them, like a technology card. And then other ones will say, you know, you get this much attack power, this much card purchasing power, if you already have a technology card in play. Or draw another card if you already have a technology card in play. So the deck grows and sort of benefits from having multiple cards with this same icon in it. And the first one you play doesn't get benefits from others. So if you have two technology cards that say draw another card if a technology card's in play, the first one you play does not get that benefit because you haven't played the other yet. The second one you play does get the benefit. So in that way, Marvel Legendary, or Legendary Marvel, does use a particular kind of hand management as its approach, but that hand management is couched within a larger idea of deck management. There are two kinds of games that I'll point to as really probably the height of hand management for me. The first is probably the epitome of a hand management game, and that would be Bonanza. Bonanza is perhaps the weirdest theme in board games that doesn't involve murdering people. I mean, there's lots of weird themes that involve killing things or killing people. Which in case, because there's lots, maybe it's not weird. But an early game from Rainer Knizia that is published by Rio Grande is, not Rainer Knizia, Uwe Rosenberg, is Bonanza. Bonanza, spelled Bohnanza, is about being a bean farmer. The German word for bean is Bohn, Bohn, so it's a pun. In the game, you're trying to harvest different kinds of beans, and when you harvest a certain number of these kinds of beans, then you get points. And the game goes until the whole group has gone through the deck, I think, three times. What makes Bonanza really interesting as a game is the very basic rule. Again, sort of like Hanabi, Antoine Baza says, hey, let's turn the cards around. Boom, we're doing something really weird and different. In Bonanza, the rule is you can't rearrange your cards. When you get a card, it goes on the back of your stack. And when you play a card, it has to come off the front of your hand. And you can't rearrange them. You can see them. You're allowed to fan them out to look at them, but you can't change the order. And so what happens is you have a bean field and you're only allowed to have two different kinds of beans. Or you have two fields, you can only have two different kinds of beans planted. And the goal is to get as many points as you can by harvesting beans. But obviously, if you have to plant the one that's at the front of your hand, it needs to be one of the two kinds of beans you already have. So what happens is you end up trading with people a lot. You will give them some beans and then they give you some beans so that you can avoid having to plant the beans you don't want to. And that's a good way to stick it to somebody. They have beans they don't want and their fields already have beans planted. If no one will take the beans that they have, then they have to rip up one of their fields and plant new ones. And if they don't have the minimum collection there, then they just lose those. It can be really frustrating. And it's one of those games where you have to do some trading. You have to do a little negotiating and taking other people's cards, or else you get to the point where no one will take yours, and then you get stuck. And the thing is, while you have to play the first card in your hand, you are allowed to get rid of the other cards in your hand. So let's say I draw a chili bean, then I've got three or four turns until I have to play it. And so if I see someone else is collecting chili beans, I could say, hey, do you want a chili bean? And they'll say, sure. So I give them the chili bean. Now that one's not in my hand anymore. It's not clogging it up. Likewise, if I'm planting blue beans, they might have an extra blue bean clogging up their hand. They might say, hey, you want this blue bean? Again, they're forced to because they need to get rid of it. So it's a really interesting negotiation game, but it's all about hand management. In fact, it might be the epitome of the hand management game. I thought of this subject because I'm preparing to teach and play one of my all-time favorite games, A Study in Emerald, first edition. I'm not complaining about second edition, I've just never had a chance to play it because I'm not going to go buy it because I really like first edition. And so, A Study in Emerald is one of a series of games that Martin Wallace made. You could point back to some of his early war games. A Few Acres of Snow was the first game that I think really hit with this model. But then he also used it in A Study in Emerald. He used it in Mythotopia. He used it in A Handful of Stars. In all of these games, the idea is it's a little bit of deck building, a little bit of and quite a bit of hand management, along with area control on a board. And this is the part that I really like. The way Wallace does it in A Study in Emerald, which is the one I've been reading the rules for most frequently, or most recently, you have a board and it's got these cities on it, and then there's cards you can buy, and then you have your deck. And in order to do anything, you're playing cards out of your deck. And that way it functions more like a regular deck builder. You get benefits from the icons in the corner of the cards, and one of the things you can do is buy more cards, and then that will give you more benefits from the cards. So that part is, I think, fairly evident. What's interesting though is there are these city cards, and you can gain control of a city by getting the most influence there and then taking control of it. And when you do that, you get the card for that city. And that card could be in this one deck where you go into the deck and you find it. Or if someone else had previously had control of the city, they have that card and they have to go through their deck and pull that card out and give it to you. So that card goes into your deck then and becomes something you can play. So far, this sounds like area control and deck building mixed, which it is pretty significantly. But here's the place where A Study in Emerald and Mythotopia, and I believe A Handful of Stars, and I believe A Few Acres of Snow. Again, I haven't played those two. Here's where this game functions differently, or functions in terms of hand management. One of the key things that deck builders tend to do is they say you have to use all of your cards each hand, or each turn. It's like when you play Dominion, you're gonna draw five cards. You're gonna do whatever you do with those five cards. And then if you have any left over that you haven't played, which you almost never will, but you never can keep any. The cards that you use, you discard. The cards you don't use, you still discard. And then you draw five new ones. So it becomes very tactical in terms of having to handle what's in your hand right now with no plan for the future, or not much. You can still think about what's coming up and sort of prepare, but generally in these games you can't keep any cards, and anything you earn you can't keep as well. So like, let's say you have a card that gets you buying power. Well, if there's nothing you want to buy right now, you can't save that buying power for later. You just lose it. And so the game becomes tactical because you can only do something by responding to the situation in front of you right now. And you kind of know what's coming up future, so you might use some strategy in shaping your tactics, but you have to deal with the five cards in your hand, because those are the only tools available to you. Well, what's interesting to me about A Study in Emerald, I mean, there's lots of stuff about that one, but Mythotopia, A Study in Emerald, they do this, is that the tactics of what are the five cards I have right now are much more heavily shrouded in strategy for a couple reasons. One, you have this board that you're manipulating, which is a state that gets set and maintained from turn to turn. So if you have a card you're trying to get, but you don't have enough, say you have a card you're trying to get, you can use this turn to add some cubes to it, and then use next turn to take control of it. In fact, you may have to do it that way, because in A Study in Emerald, you can't take control of a card unless you take it as your first action. So you get two actions every turn. To take control of a card, you have to do that as your first action, which means that someone else always has a chance to add another piece of influence to that card. So that makes it strategic rather than tactical. The other thing that I find really interesting about this kind of hand management is that you, in A Study in Emerald, you don't have to discard your cards at the end of the turn. In fact, you can't. Oh, maybe you can. I think you can discard cards, actually, as one of your actions, perhaps. I know you're not allowed to overplay cards. Yeah, I think you have to use an action to discard cards. You're not allowed to overpay, so if you have a guy, you want to move him three spaces, and you have two cards that cost two movement each, or give two movement each, that's fine. But you can't use four cards that give one movement each to pay for three movement. If you can, with the cards you're playing, if you can make exact change, you have to. You're not allowed to overpay for anything. Because part of the idea of the game is you're managing your hand. You have a hand of cards that you keep when you don't use them. And so if you discard outside of that, you're not doing a proper job of managing your hand. The other part of that that makes it strategic, though, is that you get to, not only do you have to keep cards from round to round, but you get to. And that's the part that is really different. If you have a card you want to use, like the hardest thing in A Study in Emerald is the assassinations. To do an assassination, you need a card that lets you do an assassination. And then you need a number of cards or influence in other ways that allow you to commit the assassination in the place where you are. And you have to have your agent that's committing the assassination in the city where you want to do that. So like if you wanted to commit an assassination in Washington, which has, off the top of my head, I can't remember, let's say a bomb rating of 3, which is pretty low, we'll say 4. Then you need to have an agent there. You need to have a card that allows that agent to commit the assassination. Either, if it's an agent who can commit assassinations, the card for that agent would let you do it. Or there's also the hired assassin card, which any agent can use to commit an assassination. Then you have to have enough bomb icons in order to actually pull off the assassination. So the agent itself would have some bombs. If you have another agent there, those would count. And then any cards you have that have bombs on them would also count. But that means assassinations are pretty hard to do, because often you need 3, 4, 5 bomb symbols. You only get 5 cards in your hand, so you're limited to how many cards you can have. And the hardest part is that the bomb symbols on the card that you use to commit the assassination don't count toward the bomb total. Now, there might be some people who would suggest that this isn't exactly hand management. When you're doing other things, or there's other elements that shape how you play, perhaps hand management is part of a larger thing. But to call, A Study in Emerald a hand management game isn't ideal, because a key part of scoring or making things happen is this area control. As I've said, A Study in Emerald is one of my favorite games, and I think its DNA certainly shows through in the game I've been working on for several years now, Something Wakes in the Forest. In particular, one aspect of the game that I find interesting to play is the sort of duel for resources in the area control element. That in A Study in Emerald, Wallace has us fight over cards by putting influence on them, and then you can claim them. And that is a similar maneuver to the way that cards are claimed in Something Wakes. Now, there are several significant differences as well. The two biggest ones in terms of the way I'm pursuing that game and the way these others work is, first of all, mine is not a deck builder. In my game, you have the cards that you have, and you don't have very many. You have just a few to start with, and then as you go through, you get more. But you only get to use them, or you get to use them whenever you like. However, once you use them, they rest for a turn. So if you use all three cards that you have, you start the game with three cards. If you use all three cards you have, then the next round you literally have nothing to do unless you used one of those actions to get another card. The idea of that is that you can claim the cards. One of the things about that I have not been able to overcome, I may have to use the solution that Wallace used in A Study in Emerald. So in A Study in Emerald, one of the things is when you want to claim a card, you can only do that as your first action. If you have to do anything else as your first action, then you can't claim a card that turn. And the reason for that is mechanical. It's that each of the card areas on the board is sort of a slow motion auction. And the players are putting influence on those cards and on those spaces in order to do something. Well, if another player can add influence and take the card in the same turn, then it's not an auction anymore. So that is a worry for my game as well. Although the way I've solved that is to say that you only get one action per turn and it goes in rounds. And then the way that someone could take a card without anyone else interfering is to delay their actions such that no one else has any actions left, and then they can do the thing they were trying to do. One thing I was thinking about in order to slow down or minimize that would be to make the free actions in my game only be available after you've finished your card actions. That isn't really ideal either. I don't know, maybe the thing I'm suggesting isn't the problem I think it is. Oh, I just solved a problem in my head for that particular thing. So one thing in my game, I know I'm off topic of hand management here, but I'm gonna share it in case I forget. One thing in my game is the idea you have this sort of slow motion auction where you can put influence in order to try to get first player. The thing is, if you're ahead, you maybe have extra currency to spare. So you could put extra influence in there, even if you didn't need to, in order to delay your turns. Because that's a free action, it doesn't use up one of your cards. But if I just made a rule that once you're in the lead there, you're not allowed to add more, that would stop that. Yep, I'm doing that for sure. All right, so back to hand management. So my game becomes even more pure hand management because there's no artificial managing of your hand by drawing. The only thing that keeps a card out of your hand is spending it, and then it's gone for the rest of that round and for the next round, and then you get it back. In that way, I guess I'm sort of pursuing hand management as a particular kind of process. I mean, there are a couple questions come to mind about what makes a good hand management game. How much luck should be involved in what you get? Like, I've never encountered a hand management game where, if you think about Dominion has a set market of cards you can buy. if you had a hand management game with a set market of cards you could buy, would it just become too rote? Like, it would be a solvable game? If you saw it, figured out what's the best combination of cards you can buy, and then combine that to ask, you could get just a mechanical thing that lets you win, unless there are cards that directly oppose that, in which case then it would become a kind of arms race or something. I don't know. I'm thinking out loud here in ways that might not be interesting to the listening audience. Apologies. So anyway, hand management as a mechanism stands next to and in conversation with things like deck building, but at the same time it isn't the same, and it's supposed to depend a lot less on luck, a lot more on strategy or tactics in order to shape what you're doing. Now that I think about it, I guess the game Hanabi, which I talked about as a game where you can't see your own hand, it's still a hand management game. It's just a cooperative one where I try to manage my hand and you try to manage your hand, but we do it by helping each other manage our hands. Interesting puzzle. I hadn't really thought about it that way, but I guess in that regard, Hanabi is about hand management as well. That one particularly, because again, you don't draw cards unless you choose to, and you don't get rid of cards unless you choose to. I wonder if you'd call the mind hand management. I haven't played The Mind yet. I have it on pre-order. We'll see what happens when that comes in. I'm looking forward to playing that and talking about it at some point. Seems kind of wild. What are your favorite hand management games? What aspects of this mechanism did I miss? Do you enjoy hand management over something like deck building? Or is it not significant enough to be a mechanism that is important in your mind? I'm curious and excited to hear from you. Let me know over on BoardGameGeek.com. I have guild number 3269, or my username is wombat929. You could drop me a line on Twitter at RattleboxGames, or by email, brendan@rattleboxgames.com, and let me know what you think of all these hand management shenanigans. Thanks for joining me on my walk today. It was a lovely one, and I hope that you enjoyed it. And I hope that your next walk is as pleasant as mine was. Bye-bye. So hand management games are games in which a central piece of the, or I guess the hand mechanism.
Brought to you by Rattlebox Games.